It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good Friday afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo with a big announcement on schools today.
All school districts can open everywhere in the state. Every region is below the threshold that we established, which is just great news.
Cuomo given the green light during a conference call with reporters in Albany just moments ago.
You look at our infection rate, we are probably in the best situation in the country right now. So if anybody can open schools, we can open schools. And that's true for every region in the state. Period.
Many districts have already created their own reopening proposals and sent them to the state for approval. They've opted, many of them, for a hybrid model that includes both at-home and in-school learning.
Is it good for kids to be in a physical school? Absolutely. But right now, I think the virus is in control. And so we have to look at both safety and the ability to simulate or at least provide instruction the best we can, regardless of the decisions that are made.
Wendy Patterson, the Dean of School of Education at SUNY Buffalo, she says the learning environment will be vastly different this fall.
A lot of teachers are gearing up, but the pressure is great. What we need to do is to help them be in an environment where the greatest learning will take place.
Again, the governor giving the green light for schools to reopen today. We're going to have more on this later in the broadcast. The U.S. economy added 1.8 million new jobs in July. That's the third straight month of job gains. Still a far cry from the nearly 5 million jobs created in June. Business analyst Jill Schlesinger.
Let's put this in a little bit of a frame of reference. We saw 22 million jobs evaporate in March and April. Then 7.5 million jobs in May and June. Now in July, the pace of job growth, it's slowing down a bit.
About 13 million jobs lost to the pandemic have yet to come back. Brian Brenberg with the Fox Business Channel says the second half of 2020 will be crucial to our long-term financial recovery.
A lot of the big work is going to be done in this latter part of the year. This is where the rubber hits the road. This is where employers make decisions about the long-term future, not just the short-term future. And the big question mark is, are they going to be allowed to continue to operate? That's going to be the determining factor.
The overall unemployment rate for July was 10.2%. Joblessness for the month of June was just over 11%. On Capitol Hill, it's deadline day with no deal in sight on coronavirus relief. President Trump promising executive action if Congress cannot reach common ground on another COVID-19 stimulus package. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
We're very far apart. It's most unfortunate.
Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin.
If we conclude that there's not a compromised position, the president has alternatives and executive orders.
That executive action could keep tenants from being evicted and extend some of those unemployment benefits. Grim predictions today about COVID-19 from the University of Washington. Researchers there predict up to 300,000 Americans could die by Christmas time. That's almost double the number of deaths so far. However, scientists say if we wear masks, that figure could plummet by almost 70,000.
If every individual is wearing a mask, is putting the brakes on transmission by 40%, that starts to add up.
The alarming model today comes as the nation's death toll surged past the 160,000 threshold yesterday. According to Sky News, the president of Lebanon is not ruling out a rocket or bomb as the cause for Tuesday's deadly explosion that flattened much of downtown Beirut. Fox News correspondent Trey Yinks.
Right now, there are more than 300,000 Lebanese that are displaced internally. The government seems to have no answers, and the people are demanding those answers. Overnight, we saw clashes in front of the Lebanese parliament building in Beirut.
Some 3,000 tons of ammonium nitrate stored for years in a warehouse. That's what caused the blast at a port city in the Lebanese capital. Over 150 dead, 5,000 hurt by that bomb-like blast. In the dark, that's what much of the tri-state region is still. 3 days after Tropical Storm Isaias blew through. Utility crews warn it could be next Tuesday before the lights are back on in parts of New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. Connecticut Governor Ned Lamont.
This was a brutal storm that hit us.
Lamont has asked the National Guard for help in clearing hundreds of downed trees from roads and power lines. New York's governor has asked for an investigation into how ready power crews were to deal with that storm and its aftermath. With just 3 months to go before the election, President Trump and Joe Biden both campaigning in Ohio yesterday. Trump in person, Biden by video. Trump advisor Steve Cortez confident the president will carry the Buckeye State despite Biden leading in the polls.
The Buckeye State will never back Beijing Biden. And the reason I say that is that in the heartland of America, memories are still very raw about what happened to the industrial might of the Midwest in this country. Industry was decimated by horrible trade deals. One of the principal architects of those trade deals, whether it's NAFTA or China's inclusion into the WTO, one of the principal architects was Joe Biden.
The Democratic nominee causing quite a stir yesterday when he said the following in a taped speech to black and Hispanic journalists.
What you all know, but most people don't know, unlike the African-American community, with notable exceptions, the Latino community is an incredibly diverse community.
Biden later clarified those remarks, but the damage may have already been done. Nationally syndicated radio talk show host Larry Elder.
Joe Biden has been insulting black people for decades. It just shows you the Democrats think of black people as children to whom the truth cannot be told.
President Trump called the Biden blunder disparaging and insulting to African-Americans. He also accused Biden of being against God. Biden called Trump's remarks shameful, adding that he has spent his entire life drawing from his Catholic faith. Still to come on this Friday edition of the Noon Report, Wolf's call to Cannes sports not sitting well with some, a whistleblower complaint cancels Little League in Central New York, and reaction from the bus drivers about schools reopening.
Well, good afternoon. We're tracking a couple showers and thunderstorms in the area this afternoon, but the weekend is shaping up pretty fine. I'll have forecast details in 10 minutes.
All right, looking forward to that, Kevin. Thank you very much. Getting the kiddos to and from school, just one of the many challenges districts are facing as they prepare to reopen in just a few weeks. Gary Woodcock runs a bus company in Western New York.
Our drivers will be wearing masks. They will have gloves for their use. They will be sanitizing the buses in between runs. Numbers of students on the buses will vary depending on district, and the number of runs we do will vary depending on how many kids we're bringing in at any one time.
Governor Cuomo announcing just moments ago that all schools in every region of the state, all 750 districts, can reopen come September. No shortage of reaction to Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf and his controversial recommendation that all high school sports be canceled in the Commonwealth until next year.
Parents can't come watch their kids play in their senior year in a football stadium. It just doesn't make sense.
Republican Representative Jesse Topper says districts can decide for themselves whether the games will go on, and Governor Wolf is playing politics with high school athletics.
What is the role of our government? Are we really going to get so far into people's lives that we can tell them where they can go, when they can go there, what they can do when they get there? I think this is the wrong way to go. I think it's an exceptionally heavy-handed way to govern.
The PIAA, the state's governing body for high school sports, will announce this afternoon what its plans are for sports come the fall in Pennsylvania. The National Rifle Association claims New York's Attorney General Letitia James has a political vendetta against that gun rights group. The AG is suing to dissolve the NRA, claiming its leaders raided the NRA's piggy bank for their own personal gain. Morgan Mackay of Spectrum News gets reaction from the NRA.
The organization sent out a statement saying, in part, this was a baseless, premeditated attack on our organization and the Second Amendment freedoms it fights to defend. We not only will not shrink from this fight, we will confront it and prevail.
Morgan Mackay of Spectrum News. Judicial Watch says up to 800,000 voters registered in the Commonwealth should be classified as inactive. That conservative group says Pennsylvania needs to be more aggressive in its monitoring of voter rolls. Three of Pennsylvania's largest counties are being sued by Judicial Watch for voting irregularities. The Trump administration this week filed suit against the state of Nevada after ballots were mailed to thousands of dead people there. Gym owners in New York staging simultaneous rallies all across the Buffalo region yesterday. They want the governor to know it is high time to get fitness centers back in business.
Every day that we're closed, it just is going to be that much harder and harder to open.
It's been really tough just to have no end in sight.
A lot of gym members telling Family Life having no place to work out for 5 months now, well, that is starting to take its toll.
I need this. I miss this place. I miss the people inside. And I just miss the way that the gym makes me feel.
Exercise builds your immunity. So by exercising on a regular basis, you're going to be able to build your immunity and you're going to be able to fight off those viruses.
Studies have shown regular exercise helps with depression, anxiety, and loneliness as well. Some state lawmakers even joined the gym owners at those reopening rallies yesterday.
They want some answers as to what is the reason, even though they've gone through all these extreme measures to make sure they're safe, why they can't open.
The most frustrating thing to me has been the lack of communication back to us.
Gyms have been in limbo in New York since the state entered phase four of reopening in late June. Since then, no guidance whatsoever from the state on why they cannot reopen. Many of the gyms say they know how to COVID-proof their facilities.
We can very easily socially distance. We can control a lot more than even we feel some businesses that are already open.
I've purchased a fogger. So we can fog the club on a regular basis. I purchased Remy Halo, which are a device that goes into the air conditioning duct, which actually kills the COVID.
Still, Governor Cuomo is adamant gyms will remain closed indefinitely.
We know gyms are highly problematic, not from our experience, because we haven't opened them. But we know from the other states they've been highly problematic. We know from the other states they opened them and they had to close them. That's a fact.
600 gym owners across New York suing for the right to reopen. A judge expected to hear that case later this month. The vehicle inspection extension continues in New York. From our Buffalo newsroom, here's Family Life's Dee Haley.
An expired inspection sticker is not a violation under Governor Cuomo's executive order. Governor Andrew Cuomo issued that order on March 27th, giving car owners with New York State inspection stickers that expired on or after March 31st more time to complete inspections due to the coronavirus pandemic. The order has since been extended and remains in effect. The Erie County Auto Bureau is open and offering limited in-person transactions. All visits are by appointment only. Dee Haley, Family Life News.
The Camillus New York Little League baseball season has been canceled, and all because somebody complained about social distancing violations during games. The town has shut it down, and parents are outraged.
It was upsetting because for the first time in months, my son had a sense of normality. He was able to go out with his friends and do something that he loved, which is baseball. And it was just taken away without any warning.
This mom says if youth baseball is a no-go, then other activities in the park where the kids played, well, they should be banned as well.
What was frustrating about this whole scenario is they took out the benches. But down at the park, down at the bottom of the hill, you'll see picnic tables and benches everywhere. And there's no social distancing or masks going on down there.
The season was canceled with just 1 week left to go for the Little Leaguers in Camillus, New York. You're listening to the Noon Report on Family Life. Jack in sports next. Yesterday, the deadline for NFL players to opt in or opt out of the upcoming season. So far, 67 players opting not to play because of coronavirus. 8 of them on the New England Patriots. Bills cornerback Tre'Davious White says he'll play. He had been undecided up until the 4 o'clock deadline yesterday. Baseball action last night. What a night for Braves slugger Nick Markakis. On the day he opts back into the league, he slugs a walk-off homer to give Atlanta the 4-3 win over the Blue Jays. His first game back and he wins it for the Braves, who begin a four-game series in Philly tonight. The Phillies beat the red-hot Yankees at home last night, 5-4. Kevin Newman hit a walk-off two-run single, bottom of the ninth, to lift the Pirates past the Twins, 6-5 PNC Park. The win snaps a seven-game slide for the Buccos. Cleveland's bats red-hot. They club the Reds 13-0 to complete the two-game sweep over Cincy. The Cardinals and Tigers back in action tonight for the first time in almost a week. That's because their four-game set was postponed when several St. Louis players came down with COVID-19. The Cards host the Cubbies tonight. The Tigers are in Pittsburgh. James Harden went off for 39 points as the Rockets hammered the LeBron-less Lakers, 113-97 in the bubble in Orlando. LeBron James sat out with a sore right groin. 76ers superstar Ben Simmons is on the shelf indefinitely with a knee injury. And Clemson taking the top spot in college football's new preseason coaches poll. The reigning national runner-up, led by prize quarterback Trevor Lawrence, Ohio State number two, followed by Alabama, Georgia, and then defending champion LSU, fifth in the preseason poll. At the Family Life Sports Desk, I'm Bob Price. And there is much more ahead on this busy Friday edition of the Noon Report. Cuomo's call on schools this fall. We'll have it for you just minutes away. Virus deaths could double by December. And Family Life News takes you to Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania.
We could learn a thing or two from our southern neighbors and from the other countries around the world that are refusing our ideological colonialism. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Recently, the Supreme Court of Mexico refused a sweeping Roe v. Wade kind of ruling on abortion. The ruling was in response to a decision of a lower court judge that ordered the state legislature of Veracruz to amend its penal code and allow abortion in the first 12 weeks of pregnancy. In a 4-1 decision, the court ruled that the Veracruz judge exceeded his authority. According to Justice Norma Pena, allowing courts to dictate the meaning of laws written by state legislators would be to, quote, fall into judicial activism. Now, the ruling came as an unpleasant surprise to many Westerners, especially Americans, who believe that judicial activism is what the courts are there for. And, of course, progressives expect that as nations such as Mexico develop, they'll inevitably expand so-called abortion rights and reject what the left-leaning Guardian newspaper called Mexico's, quote, strong traditions of Catholicism and machismo. Obianuju Ekiocha, the founder of Culture of Life Africa, has appropriately labeled this kind of attitude ideological colonialism or cultural imperialism. Ekiocha, who's a featured speaker at our recent Truth Love Together virtual event, has spoken out repeatedly against the Western attempts to export what she calls a culture of abortion to developing nations. The issue of abortion, says Ekiocha, has already been decided by many African countries who've decided that abortion is an attack on human life at its earliest stages. Rejecting these African values and culture, Western abortion advocates instead parallel the worst colonialists of the 19th century, who claimed to bring civilization, Christianity, and commerce to the unenlightened natives. The same dynamic can be seen in a bill currently being debated in the Senate of Kenya, called the Reproductive Health Care Act. It's intended to reduce the number of women who die during pregnancy or childbirth and addresses such issues as family planning, free prenatal care, delivery care, postnatal care, as well as assisted reproduction services. But the bill also, of course, permits abortion in cases where, quote, in the opinion of the trained health professional, the pregnancy would endanger the life or health of the mother. Now, this might seem like a narrowly tailored provision, but pro-abortion Western groups who support the bill reject a narrow interpretation of that phrase, the life or health of the mother, as a violation of a Western woman's reproductive rights. Their intent is not to reduce the number of Kenyan women who died during pregnancy. It's to increase the number of abortions in Kenya and in other developing nations. The average Kenyan, of course, like so many non-Westerners around the world, understand phrases like the life and health of the mother quite differently. But a few activist judges are all that's required to export what Ekiocha calls the culture of abortion to the rest of the world. Though the plan in Mexico was to ignore the express political choices of the Mexican people and enlist local elites to advance the agenda, thank God that at least in this case, the court refused to impose the culture of death on the locals. Perhaps we can learn a thing or two from our southern neighbors, that an advanced culture need not kill its children or compromise its integrity through judicial malpractice. To watch Obianuju Ekiocha describe the West's abortion imperialism, come to conference.colsoncenter.org. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
Weekend weather next. Here's Kevin. All right, Kevin Williams at the Weather Center, thank you very much. This is the Noon Report. I'm your host, Bob Price, and here's what's going on. This Friday afternoon, the 7th of August, today was the day Governor Cuomo made the call on schools reopening this fall. And just moments ago, on a conference call in Albany, he gave the all clear for that to happen.
You look at our infection rate, we are probably in the best situation in the country right now. So if anybody can open schools, we can open schools.
The governor says COVID infection rates are low enough for a statewide reopening of schools. He warns, however, the state health department can reject a district's reopening plan.
Department of Health can disapprove plans if they're not responsible from a health point of view.
127 of New York's nearly 750 school districts have yet to submit their reopening plan. The July jobs report went public today. Employers adding another 1.8 million workers to their payrolls. That's the third straight month of job gains. Still far from the nearly 5 million jobs created in June. Business analyst Jill Schlesinger.
That slowdown is completely related to the surge in virus in the South and West as a lot of municipalities started to slow down the reopening.
Overall, the unemployment rate dipped to just above 10%. That's a nearly 1% drop from June. The nation has nearly 13 million fewer jobs today than before the pandemic. The NRA is condemning a lawsuit filed by New York's Attorney General Letitia James, wants to dissolve that group. The NRA calls it baseless and a premeditated attack. NRA President Wayne LaPierre tweeting the move as an attempt to score political points in an election year. Correspondent Gabe Gutierrez.
LaPierre and the NRA vowed to fight, saying this is an unconstitutional premeditated attack aiming to dismantle and destroy the NRA. And we not only will not shrink from this fight, we will confront it and prevail.
U.S. coronavirus deaths now top 160,000, and researchers warn that figure could double by December. The University of Washington says, however, widespread mask wearing might save 70,000 lives by Christmas. The U.S. has lifted its global do not travel warning imposed back in March when the pandemic started. Correspondent Christina Raffini.
Now the State Department says it will give countries a rating 1 to 4 depending on specific conditions in that place in order to give Americans more information if they choose to travel.
The State Department says COVID conditions no longer warrant a blanket worldwide alert. Treasury Secretary Mnuchin and White House Chief of Staff Meadows huddled today with Republican and Democratic leaders on Capitol Hill. They are searching for a way forward on vital COVID-19 rescue money. The impasse in negotiations putting at risk weekly unemployment benefits, more than $100 billion for schools, and a fresh round of $1,200 direct payments to most Americans. Former National Security Advisor Brent Scowcroft has died. Correspondent Cammie McCormick.
Scowcroft's military and government career spanned 60 years. He served as national security advisor to Gerald Ford and George H.W. Bush. He was also an advisor to presidents from Ronald Reagan to Barack Obama. He had a military background and was a West Point graduate, but believed military force was not a substitute for diplomacy.
Brent Scowcroft was 95. It's 25 past the hour, and this is the Noon Report.
I'm
Tracy Lynn, and this is our summer-long staycation destination series. Every Friday during the Noon Report, we'll spotlight a staycation destination that's not far from home and won't break the bank. This week, we're taking you to Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania.
I'm Chris Barrett with the Pocono Mountains Visitors Bureau.
Chris, let's just go to the town of Jim Thorpe because it's a quaint place. Would you tell us, first of all, a little bit about the history?
Sure. Jim Thorpe originally was a coal and mining town, predominantly in the 1700s and 1800s, and that's really how it got its predominance to where it is right now. It's set along the Lehigh River in a valley, and the architecture in the town is beautiful, and it's pretty much as you would have seen it in the 1800s with a few exceptions. And in fact, there was a movie filmed there in 1968, The Molly Maguires, which was set in that period, and they filmed it there because the town is pretty much exactly the same as what it was at that time.
Starring Sean Connery.
Starring Sean Connery, yes. Yeah. So it was really a thrill for everybody here in the region to have that big production come to our area.
We're not endorsing that movie necessarily, but that movie helped portray people kind of taking the law into their own hands before there were work unions.
Right. So at that time, a lot of European immigrants were coming into the East Coast, laboring and mining operations, among other industrial pursuits, and they took some of those organizations with them. And some of them were, unfortunately, trying to overthrow management of some of those mining operations by some violent means because people didn't unionize at the time. There just wasn't any of that type of representation for labor.
Wow. It sheds light on some of our history. But would you tell us about the athlete, Jim Thorpe?
Sure. So it's interesting how Jim Thorpe got its name. The original name of the town was Mount Chunk. So there were two boroughs in Pennsylvania. One was East Mount Chunk, I believe, and the other was just Mount Chunk. That was the original name of the town. In the 1912 Olympics, Jim Thorpe won multiple gold medals. So he could play any sport, basketball, football, baseball, you name it, and he excelled in all of them. Well, unfortunately, he died in the 50s almost penniless. So his family was trying to find a way to A, memorialize him, and B, try to find a way to pay for his funeral expenses. So Mount Chunk volunteered to be the burying place of Jim Thorpe, and they changed the name of the town from Mount Chunk to Jim Thorpe. And that's how it all started.
And is there a statue of Jim Thorpe there in the town?
Yeah, so there's a memorial of Jim Thorpe a little outside of the town. It's actually in the old East Mount Chunk. But actually, his grandson works for the Pocono Mountains Visitors Bureau. We have a visitor center in the center of town, and he works there a few hours a week. And folks will come in, and he can tell them stories about his grandfather.
Wow, that's...
It's really neat.
So there are other things to explore there as well. We learned earlier this year that the Lehigh Gorge Scenic Railway is back open and running.
Right. That is a significant attraction in the town, and there's an excursion, and it goes through some of the countryside around Jim Thorpe, and you can see some other towns, but it's a bike train as well, so you can actually place your bike on the train, go to the first destination and ride your bike back and vice versa. And I grew up living not too far from Jim Thorpe. There were still some steam trains in town in the late 60s to early 70s. It was amazing to see them come through the town, either by freight or still with passengers at the time. Mm-hmm. So the station is still there.
And to end on a really upbeat note, people can also visit the old jail museum.
Yeah, so the old jail is very, very interesting. Unfortunately, the Molly Maguires, some of them were convicted of crimes. Some of them were hanged in that jail, so the scaffold is still there. But it operated until the 50s, and one of the Molly Maguires touched one of the walls and said that he was innocent, and his handprint remained there on the wall. And apparently multiple owners have tried to remove the handprint, and it's always come back. But the old jail, it's something that you don't normally see. So it's one of the must visits if you're going to Jim Thorpe.
Great. Chris, tell us one more time where people can go for more information before they head to Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania.
Sure. You can visit us at PoconoMountains.com. And we have a number of different planning tools. The site is mobile optimized, which means that if you come into town, you can actually view it on your mobile device. And also, we have a visitor center right in the center of town.
We hope you've enjoyed coming along on our staycation destination. You can hear all the podcasts online. Join us next week as we visit a new destination in New York State.
All right, Tracy, thank you very much. And you can download all our staycation destination features at fln.org/podcast.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. An unsettled afternoon will give way to a pretty settled weekend. The disturbance will be producing a few showers and thunderstorms into this evening, most notably across central New York and central and eastern Pennsylvania. Higher pressure, though, will deliver drier air and prospects for a decent dose of weekend sunshine and relative warmth as well. For this afternoon, a couple of showers and thunderstorms with local downpours in parts of south central New York and central and eastern Pennsylvania. Elsewhere around the region, clouds, intervals of sunshine, and a spot shower. High temperatures, mostly 70s. Tonight will become partly cloudy, low temperatures upper 50s to mid-60s. Tomorrow, some early cloud cover, but a decent amount of sunshine emerges. High temperatures will approach 80, and warm on Sunday, mostly sunny, the high in the 80s.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much. Looks like a great weekend weather-wise. Finally from us at noon today.
Message in a bottle, yeah.
A fifth grader in North Carolina learning a lesson about her message in a bottle. Listen to this. She threw that message in the ocean near Moorhead City last year, all part of her fifth grade class assignment. And it's been found, folks. It traveled 4,000 miles to Morocco, picked up by a fisherman there. He spotted it on a beach, then emailed the girl with a response, and now they're chatting on social media. They're pen pals, now you would call it, talking about that amazing and improbable discovery. Message in a bottle. Incredible. That's the world we live in. Friday, August the 7th. Have a wonderful weekend. I'm Bob Price. Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.